prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can't prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The Truth Revolution.
Welcome to Truth Revolution. I am Dave. With me is Pastor Jeff of Revolution Church. We are here. This is where faith and reason coexist, man.
That's right.
Face to face.
Like peanut butter and chocolate.
That's right.
We want reason because we care about our brains, but we also care about faith because we believe it's true.
Right. The reason we care about our brains is because God gave it to us.
Well, that's true.
And he would want us to use it. So.
All right. So today, almost every week, we talk about some kind of scientific, logical, philosophical idea.
Right.
And today we're talking about morality and evolution, and we've got a special guest on to help us deal with this. Now, we're also going to do Bible contradiction and a listener question, so we're going to get to those as well, as usual. But we want to welcome Greg Kokel to the show today. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Hey, fellas. Glad to be able to talk with you today.
Hey, how you doing? I'm going to do a quick introduction real quick. Greg started out thinking he was too smart to become a Christian and ended up giving his life for the defense of the Christian faith. Central theme of Greg's speaking and writing is that Christianity can compete in the marketplace of ideas when it's properly understood and properly articulated. That's an important part, actually.
Yeah.
Greg has been featured on Focus on the Family Radio, CBN, BBC, and multiple television and radio shows. He has published more than 180 articles, multiple books, and has spoken on nearly 60 university and college campuses, both in the U.S. and abroad. How do you find time to do anything else?
Well, you know, I listened to that introductory material, and then I realized why I feel tired.
That's right. We've read your book Tactics, and as well as all bunch of articles you've written, and that is just an amazing book. It's very helpful to anyone who is already a Christian who's thinking about engaging with people. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. It's meant to help people get into play in a reasonable way, so that their conversations look more like diplomacy than D-Day. That's what I'm after.
Yes, more like diplomacy than D-Day.
Yeah, quite often it does go the other way.
Yeah, and they can find that book on Amazon or str.org, your website, Stand to Reason, right?
Right.
Yeah, now, when you started writing this article that we're going to discuss about evolution and morality, what really prompted this? How did this come about?
Well, there's been a change in the way this whole issue has been approached, the relationship of God and morality. In the 20th century, 20th century philosophers pretty much accepted the idea that if there is no God, there is no morality.
Mm.
And therefore, as atheists, they were willing to simply bite the bullet and say that ultimately there is no right and wrong. There are different opinions about what people like and prefer. There are different cultural standards that people operate by, and maybe there's a social contract kind of thing that they're working out. People have emotions about things, and so A.J. Ayer, the great 20th century atheistic philosopher, simply called moral language emotivism. That when we say rape is wrong, we're expressing not anything about rape, we're expressing our emotional reaction. And so that, you know, pretty stable fare there, and pretty sound, because they realize that without a moral lawmaker, you just can't make sense out of transcendent moral laws. Now, I'm going to press the issue of definitions in our conversation here.
Yeah.
Because they are saying that you can't have objective, transcendent morality out there kind of thing if there is no God. You can have opinions about what is right and wrong for you. Relativistic make-me-up morality, sure, but they were clear to point out that that's just personal opinion, and no one opinion is any better than the others on that way of approaching it.
Right. Now,
21st century is different, though. The 21st century, the atheistic or the new atheist thinkers, writers, etc., people like
Dawkins,
Christopher Hitchens, for example, and Sam Harris.
Yeah,
these are people, and many other, Michael Shermer, the American atheist, are reluctant to surrender the moral ground to the theist. They want to claim, well, I'm an atheist, but I can be good without God. Okay, and that's
right.
The simple point of view. You can read billboards that say, no God, no problem. Be good for goodness sake. Or are you good without God? Millions are. And their point was that clear. Morality in no way depends on belief in God. So here they're trying to have it both ways. They want to get rid of God. They want to help themselves to their atheism. And they want to be able to be considered to be taking the high moral ground, people who are truly moral people. And that's the issue that I address in my article, God, Evolution, and Morality.
Yeah, and now let's clarify some terms here, because you talked about objective, transcendent moral values, and some people's brains went... boom.
Exploded.
When you say objective, transcendent moral values, what are you talking about?
Okay, here's maybe a simple way to put it. If somebody says rape is wrong... okay, great. I have a question for you. When you say rape is wrong, do you mean to describe the rape, or do you mean to be describing your feelings or opinions about the rape? All right?
Yeah.
I'll come back to that in a minute, but think about it, and especially in context with this other illustration. What if I said Brussels sprouts were bad? And you say, what do you mean? I say, well, they taste awful. They're disgusting.
Well, that's an objective truth right there, I'll tell you right off the bat.
Right. But the fact is, some people like those disgusting things. And so we realize when we say Brussels sprouts are bad, we're not saying anything about the Brussels sprouts. We're talking about our own opinion about those things.
Okay? Right.
We're reporting about ourselves. We're not reporting about the Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, some people might say Brussels sprouts are good, and their view would be just is right as your opposing view, right, because they're different people and they have different tastes.
Absolutely,
right?
Yep.
What I just described to you is a subjective preference. The subjects, the individuals, have different preferences. Some like Brussels sprouts, some don't, you know, and, you know, each to his own. It's true for you, but not for me. That's the way that works. Now, there are the issue of morality can be approached that way as well. In fact, many people are moral relativists. They say, well, when it comes to morality, it's just a matter of personal opinion. I like this, you like that. Who's to say who's better? Who's to say Hitler was wrong? Who's to say the terrorists were wrong? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you hear this kind of statement more and more nowadays, who's to say, because people view the morality question, what's right and wrong, kind of like the Brussels sprouts issue. Okay, fair enough. Just keep in mind that if you're talking about a morality that's just relative and subjective and like a Brussels sprouts thing, you can't at the same time object to the problem of evil in the world.
That's a good point. You can't say that God is wrong. As you pointed out in your article, was it Dawkins who actually said, he claimed that God of the Old Testament was wicked. He says the God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it. Petty, unjust.
Unforgiving, control freak, vindictive, bloodthirsty, ethnic cleanser, misogynistic, homophobic, racist, and on he goes.
Yes.
This atheist who does not believe in objective morality. And see, this is where atheists sometimes get caught in the middle here without realizing it. And look, I'm not arguing at this point that atheism is false. I'm just arguing that certain things follow naturally from an atheistic worldview. And when Dawkins in one place argues for atheism and against objective morality, and he does that. He doesn't believe in objective morality. But then when it's convenient, he complains in objective moral terms against the God of the Bible. Now, that's inconsistent, Professor Dawkins. You can't really have it both ways. Either there is morality, and your complaint against the God of the Bible is at least intelligible, but now you've got to make sense of objective morality in light of evolution. Or you can claim, as you do as an evolutionist, consistently, there is no morality, but then you can't help yourself to these moral tirades when it comes to the God of the Bible.
Very good.
And so this is simply an appeal for kind of reasonable, rational, consistent thinking on the part of the atheist. Now, Dawkins is inconsistent when he complains against the evil God of the Bible, but at least he's willing to say that if there is no God, then morality is a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't the case with some of the others that I mentioned, and many other atheists who want to claim morality for themselves, and still at the same time be atheists. And what I argue in the article is, if evolution, and they explain, by the way, they explain the origin of morality by Darwinian evolution and by the social contract. It's a combination of those things, and that's what morality amounts to. Well, that may be an accurate explanation about where morality came from. Fair enough. But please understand that the morality that you're describing is not an objective morality, because Darwinian evolution can never get, can never make rape wrong. It can only make people feel like rape is wrong, because it helps them get their selfish genes into the next generation.
Okay, let's listen. I have a little clip here from this. This is a Dr. Wilson from the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at the Center for Society and Genetics from the University of California, Los Angeles.
Okay.
Groups of organisms, not just people, but organisms, and behave in the way that we associate with goodness, will survive and reproduce in purely biological terms better than groups who behave in ways that we associate with evil.
And so that's what we're talking about. Groups that behave well.
I want you to listen to the words. He says they behave in a way that we associate with goodness.
Yes.
Notice he's characterizing goodness in terms of people's mere subjective opinion.
Very good. Yeah,
so
did.
All he's doing is identifying a relativistic morality that accomplishes something that we like, or the other organisms like, or maybe they don't like, but it just, it gets their genes into the next generation, and so it has a reproductive benefit. And the point I'm making is, even if that characterization biologically were accurate, I have a lot of problems with it, but let's just say he's right. Okay, so what has he done? He has explained relativistic morality in human beings. Mm-hmm. He has not explained why rape is itself wrong.
Right.
And this gets us right back to the equation. If there is no God, then there is no objective morality. Rape can't be wrong. What makes rape wrong? Darwinian evolution? Reorganizing molecules can't cause a moral rule to pop into the air, thin air, you know?
Yeah, because
all you have is more a different organization of molecules and different opinions about what we ought to do that help us survive better.
Yeah,
morality in a robust sense cannot come out of that.
Right, and so he could say in a very real sense, which I'd probably disagree with this, but even if it would be true that somehow rape made a culture less likely to reproduce and become strong, that evolutionarily, the culture would eventually reject rape like we have. And so he would say rape is wrong in our culture because of evolutionary process. We've determined that it's wrong. But that is only a subjective statement. In other words, it's only wrong for our society. There's
exactly.
Nothing transcendent about it at all.
Exactly. It's not wrong in itself. It's not wrong in itself. That's the difference between moral realism and moral non-realism, moral objectivism, or some say absolutism, and moral relativism. And here's the key here, again, is not to argue whether, for me at least, is not to argue whether relativism is true or false. I'm just simply saying there are two different ways of understanding morality. If morality is objective and you affirm that it's objective, there is no way that evolution can get you that objective morality. Only God can give you that. If you deny that there's God, then you're denying the only source for objective morality, and you can talk in moral language all you want and say how wonderful you are, but please understand, all you're describing is your own relativistic moral point of view that you've been tricked into believing by evolution. But it's not a robust morality. Like I said, rape is never really wrong. All you could say is you believe rape is wrong, but you can't even pat yourself on the back for that, because the person who actually believes rape is right is no less justified in his belief than you are.
Wow.
That's the problem with relativism.
Wow. And so we're coming up against a break here, but Greg's going to stick with us. And on the other side of this, we're going to talk about, like, so what?
Right.
So what?
So what do we do with it?
We still said rape is wrong for our culture. So what? We're going to talk about that a little bit. Also, we're going to get to that Bible contradiction. Maybe the listener question. We're rocking and rolling here.
We do this every time, Jeff.
I know. Hey, but you know what? Send in your listener questions, because we do answer every single one that comes in. All right. TruthEvolution.tv is our site. STR.org. Get to them both. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church.
And I'm Dave. You know, God cares more about what's on the inside of a person than the outside.
That's right. Join us Sunday morning at 9 or 11 a.m. Check out SalinaRevolution.com.
What if someone had never been to church before?
Most people here hadn't been for a long time, if ever, so you'll fit in fine.
What to wear? Just be yourself. Jeans, t-shirt, tats, whatever.
Revolution Church, Sunday morning, 9 or 11 a.m.
SalinaRevolution.com or check us out on Facebook.
SalinaRevolution.com.
Revolution!
Hi, this is Pastor Jeff from Revolution Church. Not only am I the host of the Truth Revolution radio program, but I'm also a foster parent. Did you know that there are only 20 or 30 children in Salina that need to be adopted right now? Did you know that there are children in foster care who want to live in Salina, but are sometimes placed in other towns because we don't have enough foster homes here? I want to challenge you to consider foster care today. If you're interested in doing foster care, go to kfapa.com. That's K-F-A-P-A, as in the Kansas Foster and Adoptive Parent Association.com. K-F-A-P-A.com, and get more information. You can request information, email and ask any questions you want, or possibly even sign up to take a class about foster parenting. It's easier and more difficult than you'd ever imagine, but it's also more rewarding than you'd ever imagine. Consider fostering and helping a child in need today.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Jeff, lots of people have asked you about the book Heaven is for Real. So what do you think?
I think 2 Corinthians 12 tells us what heaven is like.
It says a man was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell.
He says heaven is inexpressible. He couldn't describe it if he wanted to.
Not only that, but the Bible says no one is permitted to tell what paradise is like.
Heaven is so epic and so amazing that the few people who've seen it aren't even permitted or able to tell what it is like.
This may explain why Lazarus, who rose from the dead, didn't write a book.
Plus, the Apostle Paul was probably the one who had this experience, and he only refers to himself in the third person. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to brag about going to heaven.
He doesn't say there are rainbow-colored ponies, a blue Holy Spirit, or people with wings either.
No, he says no one is allowed to tell you what it's like.
TruthRevolution.tv.
Did you know that Truth Revolution is supported by Revolution Church and listeners like you?
It takes quite a bit of time and money to produce a quality radio show.
If you find Truth Revolution helpful, a donation would be a powerful way to make sure the message keeps going out.
This ministry is doing more than Dave and I imagined it would at the beginning.
You got that right.
And as we grow, we want to keep the goal the same. To be the place where faith and reason meet.
Donations are accepted at www.truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church.
Truth Revolution.
And we're back talking about morality and evolution.
Yes.
That's a deep well, dude.
A deep well. We're going to talk about morality. Oh, I don't know. We're also going to talk about evolution. Oh, no. It's good stuff. And we're on with Greg Kokel from Stand to Reason, STR.org. That's yeah. STR.org.
You definitely want to get over there because the article that we're talking about today, you can get there, STR.org. You can also sign up for their Solid Ground newsletter. So
that is where yeah. I got this article. Greg, how do they sign up for that newsletter?
Well, they just go to STR.org, and I'm there right now, and I got to look at it. I think click about.
You know what we're going to do?
You have to look around.
We're gonna link to your site where they can sign up for that newsletter.
Yeah, so put your computer away there, Greg, and...
Yeah, okay.
We're going to figure it out. Here.
You know, I don't know. I don't go on my own site.
Yeah, we're trying to save you here, man.
That's like, well, I was a musician, or I still am, but especially when I was putting out songs, people would always be like, so do you mainly listen to your own music? You're like, no, not really. So yeah, do you go to your own site all the time? I go to our own site, truthrevolution.tv, just because I like to hear myself talk.
Yeah, right. By the way, if they go to Stand to Reason and they click the Explore button, then they'll be able to get to the Solid Ground newsletters. You see a button for that, and then they can here they all are. Both of them are right up front.
Right.
Where was God? You know, that's another one related to the question of evil. Do you take the Bible literally? These are all articles I've written. So Drifting Towards Darwin, that's theistic evolution. So they're all available there.
That's great stuff. So if you want more of that, which you should, you can get over there at str.org, or you can just go to truthrevolution.tv, and we're going to link straight to it.
Right to it.
So, all right, we're going to answer a Bible contradiction before we get too far lost in this deep well of evolutionary morality.
Bible contradiction.
All right, today's Bible contradiction brought to you by the fine folks over there at evilbible.com.
Oh, Evil Bible.
The Evil Bible. They say, hey, is God to be found by those who seek him?
Mm.
Matthew 7:8 and Proverbs 8:17 say yes. Matthew 7 says, for everyone who asks receives, everyone who seeks finds, and the one who knocks the door will be opened. Proverbs 8:17, I love those who love me and those who seek me find me. However, Proverbs 1:28 throws a little monkey under the wrench there.
Okay.
Then they will call me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, and I will not be found. So, no, God is not found by those who seek him. That's a legitimate Bible contradiction by the fine folks over there at evilbible.com.
Oh, my friends. This is, of course, this is not a contradiction. If you're using our cracked acronym, C-R-A-C-K-E-D, mm-hmm. the very first C stands for what, Dave?
Context.
Context. You got to read the context. This is the most simple thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you just read the context, you'll understand this is not even talking about God in the book of Proverbs here.
Right.
Proverbs 1, verse 20, okay, because they quoted verse 28.
Right.
Let me read you verse 20 and 21.
Do.
It says, out in the open, wisdom calls aloud. She raises her voice in the public square. On the top of the wall, she cries out. At the city gate, she makes her speech. Okay? This is wisdom personified.
Right.
And so it's not saying, oh, God's not going to answer you. It's saying wisdom. Sorry. And it's not, it's talking about, look, if you are living your life like a fool, and you think that when your life starts crashing down, suddenly you're going to make good choices.
Right.
No, that's not how life works. Because
right.
you just listen, Proverbs 1, we're going to read the context, 25 mm-hmm. to 29. Since you disregard all my advice, this is wisdom talking, and you don't accept my rebuke, I in turn will laugh when disaster strikes you. I will mock when calamity overtakes you. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, when disaster sweeps you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you, then they will call to me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, but will not find me, since they hated knowledge. Okay, this is not saying God's not going to answer if right. you need him.
Totally talking about wisdom.
Wow. We might also be good to point out that the D mm-hmm. is dialect in right. our cracked acronym, and this is personifying wisdom. This isn't an actual person, right? This is a personification of an attribute that we want.
Right.
Wisdom. We want to be wise people. And so when it says, oh, you're going to call out, but I'm not going to answer, it's not saying no one's going to answer. Say it's too late. That's the point. It's right. too late, right?
Yeah.
You have to understand the type of language they're using there. I don't know. Is there anything you'd want to add to that, Greg?
Yeah, I thought that was well done. I got a simple paraphrase for that verse. If you ignore wisdom and do something stupid, you're on your own.
There you go.
That's about what it means. Yeah, oh, that is absolutely what it means. That's we're going to give a good round of applause to that right. paraphrase right there. All right, so that's the answer for our Bible contradiction today.
We have a rule at Stand to Reason that fits in here, and it has to do with reading your Bible. And the rule is, catch this, never read a Bible verse.
That is a good one.
There you go. Right.
Yeah, it is a good one.
Read them all together, please.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and in our cracked acronym, the K stands for knit together. Mm. We simply mean, even from Genesis to Revelation, there are things that if you don't understand what Genesis was talking about, you're going to miss stuff in Revelation.
That's right.
If you don't understand what Daniel was talking about, you're going to miss what Jesus was saying in Matthew chapter 24.
Right.
I mean, you can't take any verse by itself. So that's the answer there.
Bible contradiction.
All right,
good stuff. Now, let's get back to this morality thing. I'd like to start with a quote by Richard Dawkins. And you could respond to him there, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go.
A sort of bedrock of it probably comes from our Darwinian heritage as a kind of misfiring byproduct of our Darwinian past when we lived in small villages or small roving bands, which meant that we were surrounded by close kin, and that, as you no doubt know, is one good prerequisite for the evolution of altruism under Darwinian rules. And also, in those small villages or roving bands, we would have been surrounded by people whom we are likely to meet again and again throughout our life, which provides the basis for the other main Darwinian reason to be moral or altruistic. That, I think, is the Darwinian origin.
Okay, so the Darwinian origin of altruism.
Right, right. Here's the one difficulty is Richard Dawkins has a beautiful British accent, so he always sounds right.
Yes, it's true.
It's such a bummer. I was in the UK last year, and I said, does it work in reverse? And they said, no, it doesn't. So the Yanks sound like idiots. Okay, fine. Two thoughts for Professor Dawkins on this one. Nothing that he said is empirically verified, all right?
Interesting.
What he has done is assumed the evolutionary model and then used evolution to tell a story of how to explain ethics. I don't know how anybody would go about empirically verifying that as we grew up through people groups and tribes and stuff like that, that somehow our genes were able to recognize similar genes in people who are genetically close to us. And so therefore we treat them better because they have our genes too. And therefore, if we throw ourselves on a grenade or a spear or something like that, our genes, or actually similar genes in the other person, are able to get into the next generation, and that's how morality gets passed on. This is such a completely fanciful story that it's embarrassing for me to hear it, because it's what is often referred to as a just so story.
Hmm.
You presume your view, and then you just tell a tale. Just so stories were written by Rudyard Kipling. They're kids' progress stories that told how the leopard got his spots and that kind of stuff. And so some people, even on the evolution side, skeptical of these kinds of characterizations that people like Richard Dawkins are very good at making, these stories they tell, they've labeled them as just so stories because, I understand what you mean, but where's your verification for this? Okay, so that's the first problem. It's the verification problem. It presumes evolution. He tells a story that can't be verified. How do you know this is the way it happened? And sometimes these stories are so unusual, it's hard to even imagine how they could be true. Okay, that's the first problem.
Yeah.
Let's just say he's right, though. Let's just say, okay, Richard, you're right. Great. What are you left with? You're left with relativistic morality. Period.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that evolution can get you, if it gets you anything, is relativistic morality. People believing that something is quote-unquote right because it helps them get their selfish gene, which is Dawkins's term, into the next generation. Okay, well, maybe that's the truth of the matter. But then don't start talking about how you can be good for the sake of goodness, for goodness' sake, for its own sake, because there is no good in goodness on that view.
Mm.
There is just an illusion, a ploy of evolution to get your genes into the next generation. And there is some professors or Darwinists like Michael Ruse, philosopher, is very, very clear on this. He simply says there's nothing, love your neighbor as yourself, it's simply a psychological belief put in place by natural selection in order to maintain and improve our reproductive fitness. There's nothing more in them than that. We could easily have evolved a completely different moral system from that which we have. That's quote unquote there. Michael Ruse, University of Florida, or Florida State University.
Yeah.
He is honest about it. He understands it. He's a philosopher, not a biologist. He's understanding this correctly. And actually, in the case of Dawkins, he's understanding it correctly, too. It's other new atheists and the rank-and-file atheists who want to try to take the high moral ground and say, yeah, I can be moral without God. Really? Okay, tell me what you mean by moral. You can do my actions. You can love your neighbor. But what makes that moral in itself? That's the question.
That's a good question. And let us be clear on this. We're up against the end of our show. So if you want more, we're going to do more online only.
Right, truthrevolution.tv.
So you can get the truthrevolution.tv and hear the rest of this interview. We're going to talk about, if it is true, how can a moral go from this ethereal, non-physical subject? How can it pass through biological mechanisms? How can that happen? Or is it possible or not? But we've got to make it absolutely clear. Do you think rape is wrong because our society doesn't like it? Or do you think rape is wrong for all people at all times? If you think it's wrong for all people at all times, your only option is to say, that came from God.
Right.
It could not have come from evolutionary mechanism. So, all right, truthrevolution.tv and Revolution Church. We would love to have you out here at Revolution Church.
9 and 11 on Sundays.
That's right, if you're in the Salina area in Kansas. If you're not in Kansas, you can check us out online. We go live every Sunday, 9 and 11. Just get to truthrevolution.tv and click on when and where. We'd love to have you.
Revolution.
Welcome to the online portion of the show.
All right, you podcasters and website interwebs users.
Right. All those people that are getting the FM and AM signals, they're not getting this.
All right. Greg, thanks for staying with us for this online-only stuff.
Too. Well, now we got the hardcore users.
That's right.
Power users we're talking to.
That's right. So we're going to take it up a notch.
Right.
Is it possible or not to transition something from a non-physical entity, such as, you know, we would call moral, it's non-physical, can you pass that by biological means of reproduction? Is that possible or is it not?
There doesn't seem to be any way that that could be the case. I mean, if somebody wants to come up with an explanation that's coherent, they're welcome to do that. But if we don't see any way for that to be the case, and there's no reason to think that that's the case, well, then it's probably not the case. And keep in mind, too, that atheists are materialists almost without exception. And what a materialist is somebody who believes in the material world, period. Anything that is not, he believes that all reality is constructed of physical things in motion, things that are governed by the laws of physics and chemistry. Okay, fair enough. That is a worldview called physicalism or naturalism, governed by natural laws, or materialism. Okay, great.
It's kind of like Dave's dating life is governed by quantum physics.
Yeah, very, very quantum.
Sometimes it's here, sometimes it's not.
I think it's mostly not.
That's not good. There's another view that may be like that. That's like reality is all in your mind, you know, and so I don't know. But the point is, that atheists, people involved in this discussion, are materialists. Okay, fine. Maybe materialism is true. They could be right. But if materialism is true, then there are no moral obligations by definition, because moral obligations are not physical. My obligation to help the poor, if there is one, it's not something that's influenced by the laws of physics. It's
that's
not
so
governed
good.
By natural law. It doesn't extend in space. It doesn't have any volume to it. It's obvious. It's not rocket science, as they say.
Yeah.
That moral obligations, when you reflect on them, are not physical things. So if there is an objective moral obligation, which is not physical, and you are a physicalist, well, this is a proof that your physicalism is false.
Wow.
If it really is the case that physicalism or materialism is true, then even in principle, there cannot be genuine, objective, transcendent moral obligations.
So even if we could,
physical things which wouldn't exist in that worldview.
Yeah. So even if we could come up with a physical reason why these morals are passed biologically, it still wouldn't follow that I need to obey those desires to do good.
Well, that's another difficulty. Even if you could say that wouldn't happen with physicalism, because you and this is what I hope people are seeing, you cannot come up with a physical explanation for a non-physical thing in materialism, because in materialism, by definition, non-physical things don't even exist.
True.
Now, you could be an atheist who's not a physicalist and could believe in transcendent moral obligations that exist in kind of a platonic universe, you know, as a platonic ideal. But then you'd have to ask the question that you just asked, okay, why? So there's a platonic ideal for justice. Why do I have to be just? What creates the obligation upon me? And if I don't be if I'm not just, then who's going to punish me? Nobody. So that's a little wrinkle if you want to kind of adjust your worldview to try to make room for morality, and it's not a personal God that's grounding it, you still run into a difficult problem.
That's fascinating. Okay, so let me propose, this is something I heard from a doctor at UCLA, a little scenario, and you just tell me if you think, well, you can tell me what you think about it. So he said, he asked the question, what would happen if you took one bad person and one good person and put them on the stranded on an island together?
And put them what?
Stranded on an island together. And most people in the crowd said, oh, you know, it'd take a couple days and this person who was pure evil would get rid of the person who was pure good. He said, okay, what would happen if you put a bunch of good people stranded on an island and a bunch of bad people stranded on an island? And they said, well, the island that was bad would degenerate and corrupt itself and doom itself, and the island full of good people would produce a good society eventually. And he said, see, that right there is how we know that evolution can produce morality, because eventually you're going to filter out all the bad things, and you're going to end up with, if you want a good society, you're going to end up with people who are holding society together.
Okay. All right, let me ask you a question. I mean, there's a lot I could say about that illustration, but one is, obviously, evolution isn't doing a very good job. Because, you know, look at, because human beings have been around for, what, hundreds of thousands of years their take?
We're still waiting.
We're supposed to be getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
If goodness is just a function of evolution, but it's not. Keep in mind, you know, in evolution, bad traits don't get passed on to the next generation. That's how we know they're bad.
Mm.
They don't have any survival benefit, and so they don't get passed on. You know, if you got, you know, if your legs are growing out of the wrong place of your body because of a genetic mutation, you're probably not going to get your. That's a bad mutation because you don't reproduce, right?
Right, right.
And it would be a good mutation if you reproduced more than regular folk, and you killed all the rest of them, and now you're at the top of the heap. So, in that view, then, bad means not beneficial for survival, which means bad things disappear very quickly. Only the good things remain. Now, if that's the way evolution works, why is there so much bad in the world still? This, by the way, I call the evolutionist problem of evil. If evolution were true, we'd be getting ever better and better every day, but we're not. The same problems exist. Evil is everywhere, and atheistic evolutionists are quick to complain about evil everywhere. But I have one other. There's another problem with it. The other problem is that he said, let's put a bunch of good people in with a bunch of bad people, or one good person, one bad. Wait, what does this word mean? Good?
Oh.
Bad?
Right. We've
this
already
is the very
pre.
Thing in question. It's the very thing we're trying to figure out the meaning of. You can't help yourself to it. Put a bunch of good people.
Yeah.
Whether the people are good or not is based on an external standard. So what is your standard for that? And if it's an evolutionary standard, well, then you've smuggled into the front end of the illustration what you're trying to prove out of the back end, and it's circular.
Yeah, it's pre-selection in your analogy. You can't do that.
It's intelligent design is what it is.
It is. It's intelligent design. That's amazing.
It's intelligent design to make your argument work.
Yeah, and that actually answers the second part of his lecture, because he gave the example about chickens who, and I'm going to get this partly wrong, but so if any of the listeners have seen this analogy, don't persecute me for it. But the gist of it was they put a bunch of chickens together, and they selected the mean chickens and put them together, and they selected the nice chickens and put them together. And after a while, a few generations, the mean chickens were producing less eggs. They were haggard. They were awful looking. And the nice chickens are producing more eggs, doing well. And he said, see, evolution produces better things. But that's not evolution.
Okay. Here's my question, though. My question is, what does he mean by better, and how is he using the term mean? Now, he may be using it descriptively, that chickens are ones that peck other chickens.
Yeah.
So then you're just saying, descriptively, chickens that peck other chickens don't produce as much eggs. All right? Okay, fair enough. All right, great. But notice that he's doing more than describing. Morality is prescription. It doesn't explain what took place. It tells what ought to take place. So are we saying that they were mean and they shouldn't have been mean?
Mm.
That they were doing something immoral? Or are we just looking at the pragmatic results? I think the second in his illustration, he's not talking about real morality, but even if that's the morality he has in mind, it's still subjective morality. It's not objective morality. It's just individualized based on the person or the group. It is not transcendent. And transcendent morality is what you need to ground the problem of evil. And it's also what you need to be able to say you're really good for goodness sake, which is their claim.
That's true. And then you'd have to ask the question, well, okay, evolutionist, why do you say that more eggs is morally better than less eggs? I mean, what standard are you basing that on?
From an evolutionary assessment, because that you're getting your genes into the next generation, but it's not a morally better, it is just a pragmatic better.
Exactly.
It accomplishes the goal that it's designed to accomplish.
Exactly. It's not a moral reason. It's only
That's
pragmatic.
Right.
There's no more reason to say that more eggs is better.
That's
and then
right.
Even to go back to your last point, that wasn't evolution. That was intelligent design by the researchers. I mean, he purposely selected the chickens that he wanted to select.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. All right. Hey, you know what? We have kept you for quite a while. Thank you so much for being here with us. Give us one more time the name of your organization. Your website is str.org. Give us the name of your organization and
it's
the newsletter.
Stand to Reason. And the acronym is STR, and our website is str.org. And the articles we've been talking about, which is God, Evolution, and Morality, are available there, and a whole bunch of other things that I've done. Actually, I have thousands of pages of information. And if you like to podcast my own show, you can do that. I've been broadcasting for 25 years, 3 to 6 hours a week.
Wow, that's great. And he's written a book called Tactics, which we love. He's written actually multiple books, but we've really liked Tactics. If you're a Christian, you should go out and get it right now so you can stop arguing and start discussing.
There you go.
It's really, really good.
The non-Christians can get it too if they want. There's no limit to that.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's true.
Oh, you're going to charge them extra, right?
So it's good stuff. And, you know, I just want to point out that when I got my master's from Biola, I heard you lecture there. That was the very first time I'd ever heard you, and blew my mind. It was great stuff. I've appreciated you for a number of years now. So
thank you.
It's just a pleasure to have you on the show, and I just want to say God bless to your ministry. And
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Dave, good talk with you both.
Thanks, man.
And everybody listening, get out to truthrevolution.tv and str.org.